Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
What's up, sports fans? It is another brand new episode of the Lookout Landing podcast just for you. If you're listening to this, that is right. It was made specifically for you. Tailor-made episode for each individual listener. They said it couldn't be done. We found a way to do it anyway. So your listenership means the world to us. And this is the present that we've gotten for you. Today, it is me and Kate. No John. John is off doing John things. But The team is still strong. We're here. We're delivering you the content you deserve. It's me, Matthew Robertson, staff writer, podcast host at Lookout Landing. Find me on Twitter at mroberson22. And Kate Prusser is on the other line on Twitter at Kate Prusser and all over lookoutlanding.com. Kate, sup?
Hello. How are you?
I am alive.
Remember, we're normalizing saying I'm doing bad. Because that is a totally valid response. So
I know. I do miss when this part of the show was like us actually talking about things we were doing or like what's been going on in our life.
Because our lives were so tiny.
I know. And now it's just like, y'all ever notice that tree outside your window?
Yes.
I sneezed pretty hard earlier. Is that anything?
Is that something
the listeners want to know about?
I am being tortured right now because I have a song stuck in my head and I think it's just that, like, without people to talk to and without, like, kind of the general chatter that goes on, you know, in a world where you're not shut inside your house all the time, my brain has decided to, like, fill the silence. Like, it's vamping for time. Like, we're just gonna make some noise until our regularly scheduled programming is back. So I get this worst song stuck in my head just all the time. And it's been a loop of various terrible songs. And I think my brain is running out of material because today it's been, I like to eat.
Oh, yup.
Eatles and beninis. And like once that starts going, it just, and with all the vowels and you just repeat it and repeat it. It has been, and I don't say this lightly, a hellscape in my brain today. And I'm trying, I don't usually actively try to get rid of an earworm because I feel like if you pay attention to it, it makes it worse. You just gotta let it run its course. But this one, I'd have no idea how this song got stuck in my head. I never sang it as a kid. I didn't go to camp. I don't have a kid. I have a very, like, child-free existence. So it wasn't in a TV show I saw or anything. I have no idea what it's doing there, but it's just eat. Over and over and over again. It's driving me nuts.
That song does go hard, though. If you ever want to, like, turn a preschool out, put that song on.
If you want to turn a preschool up.
Because I remember that to me, like, I did sing that in school. We definitely were taught that in preschool, maybe kindergarten, as, like, a way to learn the vowel sounds. So that was, like, a very specific memory. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I'm glad it's bringing some joy to someone.
You know what's been happening to me? This actually might be, I don't know if this is a me thing or if this is maybe universal. I have been getting tweets stuck in my head. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes.
Like just like the phrasing of a certain tweet gets stuck yes. in your head. Or like someone will say something particularly funny in our Slack channel or like just like a combination of words that I think is funny. And I'll just like repeat that in my head over and over and over. I think that's kind of a bit of like a stand-in or like a substitute for actual conversation. Like now the things people say online are like my inner monologue, which is concerning.
It is. I think it is very much a symptom of how internet poisoned my brain is, that like literal whole tweets get stuck in there. And then just fragments too, like go burr, which I guess is more of like a meme than a tweet. Yes, all the time. Can't see the word dog without saying it doge. Like, just a constant, yeah, a constant stream of that. I think that's a good point though, that it's like what we consume online is taking place of at the actual human conversations we would have been having. So I guess everybody be real careful about what you're inputting, what you're programming yourself with right now.
Yeah, so we're doing great. If you're struggling, I cannot relate at all. I've never been better. Everything in my brain is firing on all cylinders. And I'm probably getting smarter, stronger, and happier. Mm-hmm, so that's where I'm at. Congratulations to me and me only. Well, thank God for the Seattle Mariners, frankly, because they gave us some little nuggets.
They did
some
a
things
thing.
To talk
they
about.
They did a couple things.
They did
we haven't recorded
two things.
In a while because they weren't doing anything. So we had nothing to talk about.
I know. Yeah. To pull the curtain back for the listeners, we have been on a pretty regular schedule, which we're proud of. And, you know, we do that for you, episode a week pretty much. But we record them, you know, before they actually come out. It's like the Taylor Trammell interview was our last episode, but we recorded that like 4 or 5 days before we put it out. So it has been a long time since we've actually sat down and talked to each other. And since the last time we spoke, the Mariners added Ken Giles and James Paxton, two names that like casual baseball fans would know, like people who aren't just like Mariners figures.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No,
a lot of times we do get excited about stuff like that.
Actual
like
baseball players.
Yeah. Like I know maybe cover your ears for this part, Kate, but like if they had gotten Brad Miller, a certain segment of Mariner fans would be like, yay, Brad Miller, we remember him because he was on the Mariners. And everyone else would be like, who, what is that? Why are Mariners fans flooding my timeline with like excited tweets about this guy who played center for the Kings?
How annoying do you think Mariners fans are to like the general baseball? Like, how annoying do you think they think we are?
I do wonder about that because that is a good question. I think for the most part, we being Mariners Twitter, Mariners fans in general, are like the harmless little sibling. I feel like we've seen kind of like maybe a peek into what things will be like if the Mariners become good, which unfortunately is Seahawks Twitter, one of the worst places in the entire world. The reason why I don't really share opinions about the Seahawks publicly is because I hate Seahawks Twitter. But I don't think
it's
people
a scary
hate
place.
Mariners fans.
No.
It is a really scary place.
I mean, hating Mariners fans is like the ultimate punching down, right? Like there are very few fan bases that have suffered more than Mariners fan. And everyone knows
right.
it. Like they've been around long enough that even while being kind of on the fringes, our suffering at least is mainstream. So
I do think that helps the content. Like when I think of like when I think of like fan bases of bad teams, like the Mariners, Rockies fans are pretty like funny on Twitter. I follow a lot of White Sox fans. I know they're good now, but they were bad for so long. Like it definitely helps you develop like a voice and a personality when your team is bad.
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely part of the reason why Mariners fans specifically have contributed so much in the baseball writing world. People are always, when I talk to people from other from around baseball who are not Seattle fans. They're like, why are Mariners fans so overrepresented in the? And I'm like, because we are over, speaking very broadly, like overeducated and under satisfied, under winning, under successful. I don't know whatever weird combination yeah. it is that makes that alchemy.
No, it makes sense. It's like how there's so many great songs about unrequited love. It's kind of the same idea.
Yes, yeah. Or what they used to tell me in teaching was, because I'd be like, there are all these case studies of like people being successful. I was teaching in inner city Philadelphia. I was not being successful. I was like, where are all these other stories? And they're like, oh, nobody talks about the bad days. But I think that in most art, it's exactly the opposite. You only talk about the bad days. No one talks about the like just good normal days, because that's not a story, right?
Yeah,
a story exactly. starts with a wound, and Mariners fans are more wounded than anyone else out there.
Right. It's like how you don't ever think about like the Reds, you know, like they're just kind of floating in the middle. There's not like great days to speak of or terrible days to speak of. They're just the Reds, you know.
I don't know. They are. I was doing. I blurbed the. This is actual baseball content. We can talk about this briefly before we get into the signings. Obviously, we have a whole Mariners minor leagues pod that you should listen to that is dropping. Will drop maybe shortly after this one, I think. Where we kind of talk about the top 30 prospects in the system. Obviously, it's prospect ranking system season. Fangraphs came out with theirs today. There are 6 Mariners in the top 100, which is more than have been there since I started covering this, for sure. Not a lot of Reds, and not a lot of anyone. So that's what links into what you were saying, Matthew. I think that the franchise might be headed for a bit of a rough patch. Whereas the Mariners are, from all these metrics, ascending, especially considering the rest of the AL West. Houston had one prospect in the top 100. The Angels had 2, one of whom is Brandon Marsh, who's going to graduate off that list this year. Texas had none. They had some just outside the top 100. And Oakland had 1, and it was AJ Puck, which is... he's somebody who's had a lot of injury problems, and he's MLB adjacent. So definitely, I think, out of the AL West, I would say pretty clearly Seattle's farm system is in the best shape of the AL West. I think it's the class of the AL West and looks to be, you know, something that's going to regenerate down the road, too. Oakland always has a lot of prospects that they seem to get lucky on, but they've been picking outside of the top 100, or outside of the top 10, we'll say, for so long, top 15 even. And then they had the Kyler Murray issue, where they basically lost a first-round pick. The Astros system is really thick. They're going to be moving into a phase of rebuilding that system pretty soon, if they're not there now. It's really hard. I think you could make an argument for the Rangers, maybe make an argument for the Angels. And we'll be talking about all of this when we do our AL West threat assessments, which is kind of like a little bit of a spin on the Deadspin, why your team sucks. I guess it's not Deadspin anymore, RIP that. But we'll be doing overviews of all these teams over the next coming weeks as we kind of gear up for spring training. But yeah, the Mariners are... if the farm system clicks, which obviously is a big if, but it definitely looks like we are a team on the upswing.
Yeah. Angels suck. Astros sucks. Oakland, you're cool. Texas, whatever.
You suck. You're cool.
That's my official stance. I've been whatever on Texas since their like early 2010s run where they were playing in the World Series. Like ever since then, they've just gone downhill, and I'm like, I don't really care about y'all anymore. All of my anger shifted towards Anaheim and Houston completely.
Yeah, I think that the Angels had a real heel turn off season where you have the Keenan Middleton, and we can talk about that too. You have the Keenan Middleton split with some fans being pretty salty, and he's pretty salty right back. So we've got a fun little built-in rivalry there. but also acquiring Kurt Suzuki and just kind of leaning into being a certain type of team with a certain type of player, I guess I'll say.
Shitbirds, I believe is what they call them.
Rendon, same thing. And then, you know, they haven't fired Mickey Callaway yet, despite some pretty credible accusations of what would you call it? Like sexual harassment, I guess.
Documented sexual harassment. Okay,
yeah. I don't know why it's taking them so long to act on that, but yeah, just a real stinker of an off season from the Angels. So they have maybe either tied with or vaulted slightly above the Astros for me in my personal disliking rankings.
Yeah, which leads us nicely into a conversation actually about, you know, the Astros, the stench of the Astros making their way to Seattle, because now the Mariners have Ken Giles, a former Astro.
Nice segue.
Thank you. But I was going to say, for those who don't know, because I didn't actually know this until the Mariners signed him, he has been pretty outspoken against the Astros. Went as far as offering to give his World Series ring back, which is something, you know, like he definitely was involved, you know, like it's hard to be like, oh my god, I'm so mad now, when like you already did the thing.
Right.
You were already playing for that team and already cheated to the World Series, and then now to be like, oh, we got caught, I'm so sorry, that's like, you know, a whole other conversation, that's kind of weak. But he does at least publicly seem remorseful, which is kind of better than most Astros can say. But he's on the Seattle Mariners now. And the other thing about Ken Giles, a lot of people will remember, yes, he is the guy who punched himself in the face while he was leaving the field. But he's also been, like, really good. Like, there's no really way around it. Looking at a tweet here from Cespedes Family Barbecue, they posted this when the Mariners signed Ken Giles. He has the fourth highest WAR and fourth lowest FIP among all relievers from 2014 to 2019. So that's six seasons where he was, like, one of the best relievers in the world. Then 2020 is a shortened season and he got injured, so we're not going to see him until 2022, which is kind of a bummer. But also you can see the thinking there from Jerry DePoto, like, okay, if we're going to add a reliever, let's add one that can help us in 2022 when we think we're actually going to be good, rather than this year when they might just kind of be okay. So I personally like this signing. I was confused at first, but then when I started thinking critically about it, I was like, this does make sense. Like, I'm not against it for sure. They didn't like overpay or do anything crazy. What was your reaction when you heard that the Mariners had signed Ken Giles?
Hysterical laughter. I mean, just because like we had been sitting and begging for some kind of a move, and then they made a move and it was somebody who can't help the team in 2021. So that initially I was like annoyed, and it sort of fit in with something that I've been saying all along, which is that the failure of the Mariners offseason has been one of communication. Like, I feel like they tried to have it both ways with fans. They tried to say, we're going to compete in 2021 while not spending any money to back that up, not actively making the 2021 team any better. Obviously, that changes later on. Put a pin in that for now. But yeah, if they had just come out and said, like, we like our young guys, we want to give them a chance to play, we're going to make minimal upgrades, and that had been the message from day one, I think people would have been much less bellyachy. And like, even me, it took me a while to get past being annoyed that the big signing that they had made was somebody who wasn't going to help the team in 2021, and going and looking at Ken Giles' Statcast page, which is, for 2019, incredible looking. I mean, it's all red, like 95th percentile in expected slugging, which somehow he gave up a lot of barrels, so I don't know what exactly is going on with that. Doesn't allow hard hit balls, 99th percentile for strikeout percentage, like just not giving up a lot of hard contact, striking a ton of guys out, 94th percentile for fastball velocity. We'll see how that comes back post Tommy John, which is obviously, you know, kind of a pig in a poke, you might say. You never know exactly what's going to come out on the other end of Tommy John, but guys generally do throw as hard, and some even harder, than before they had the surgery, so we'll just see. And DePoto has made it very clear he's not afraid to sign a reliever who's had Tommy John. I mean, Middleton had Tommy John. Munoz had Tommy John. They acquired in trade. They're not afraid of a TJ surgery or even two. So I feel confident. Oops, sorry, that's my phone blowing up and I don't know why.
Answer it on
air. No, I'm not going to. I can tell from the number it's like a spam call. Sorry. And it's Ken Giles. Very excited about the signing, excited about the upside. This might tie into something we're going to talk about a little later, but a certain sports radio personality in Seattle who covered the Astros at the time was vehemently against the signing, like thinks it's a terrible signing. And I just think that is such a bizarre and wrong take because Giles, yes, okay, Ken Giles melted down in the postseason for the Astros. He was not good he was very, very good, and then he was not good.
Lost his closer job during the playoffs, I believe. Yeah. That's when they ended up going to Roberto, name redacted.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when the Astros decided to just absolutely tell us who they were and traded Giles for Osuna, like, I'm going to say the quiet parts loud now. But he had been strong up to that point. It was just like, so again, and then you get the face punching and all that. And to me, that says so much more about the Astros and their culture. And then that kind of fits in with what Giles said after he left. Like he said, he felt like he lost himself, like he wasn't who he was. So I think that is a probable example of a good pitcher who just mentally, and he's not the only Astros pitcher who's going through that. I mean, their top prospect, Forrest Whitley, Fangraphs on that top 100 prospects knocked him all the way off to 106, which I think is like a little overdramatic. Keith Law has him at 29. So if you want to see like what the general industry perception of, but the whisperings I've heard about Whitley are that just mentally he's, it's not the talent, it's his headspace. So whatever they're doing with the Astros, for all the gains that they're making on field, I think that just environmentally, it seems to be a really toxic environment and has been. And so I'm really excited to see. Giles was very good with Toronto before getting hurt, looked to be on the upswing there. So yeah, maybe it's just a case of getting him the heck out of Houston.
Yeah, I just want to highlight the 2017 numbers you were talking about. In the regular season, he was very good. Like you said, he was their closer. 34 saves, 2.39 FIP, 1.037 WHIP, 83 strikeouts to only 21 walks. And then, yeah, the postseason was bad. He finished the postseason across the three series the Astros played, so against Boston, New York, and the Dodgers combined, he finished with an 11.74 ERA. 10 earned runs.
Oh, no, Ken.
Yeah, 10 earned runs in just 7.2 innings.
Oh, no, baby.
A home run allowed in every series.
Oh, no,
the exact thing you don't want from your closer.
Oh, no,
and
baby.
Yet they still won the World Series because they were cheating. But it's not important. Not why we're here. Just wanted to highlight that he can be very A to Z, which is, you know, scary with relievers. You want them to be more A to F, A to G if they are going to struggle. You know, you never want to go all the way to Z. But it's pretty much all upside too is the other thing. Like if he's bad, it's not going to like torpedo the franchise. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's not like they gave all of their money or all of their resources to Ken Giles.
Right.
So it's hard. Like you were saying about talk radio people and just sort of the hot takesmen out there, it's hard to get like riled up about this. Like if anything, it's like a mild signing that could, you know, like level up to being pretty good or okay. But
yeah, absolutely.
If he's really, really, really bad, we're still in fine shape because we have, you know, a decent crop of young relievers. Some of the pitching prospects inevitably probably will become relievers, and like that's fine. You know, you're not going to hit on all of them, but there are ones where you can take a chance, and I think that's exactly what short deals for bullpen guys are.
Absolutely. And you're seeing this more and more as a trend where teams are signing guys and just eating their 1 year of TJ recovery with the idea that they're going to get production at a below market rate in that next year. And then it's a good deal for the reliever as well, or for the pitcher, who gets to be in a team-sponsored facility while they're working out and rehabbing, gets to be under the guidance of team doctors, and has some financial security. So it's really kind of a win-win, even though I am loath to reward MLB owners for making cheap moves. But it is definitely, like you said, a way to get potentially somebody who could be a really, really, if you pick well, you know, a potential closer for cheap, which would be incredible. And the Mariners have plenty of options. I mean, that's what I really like, is like, you have Munoz coming back from TJ surgery. There's some prospect heap down there. You have Middleton as a signing. Like, there are a lot of guys who could be closer guys. Oh, Montero, who they traded for from the Rangers. So some exciting stuff in there. And also, just to cap off the Ken Giles talk, I hated facing Ken Giles as an Astro, because when he came in, I was like, well, that's it. The game is over. I was really surprised looking back and seeing that his tenure is not fondly remembered in Houston. And again, it speaks to how big playoff performances play a role in how people remember you. We wouldn't know much about that being Mariners fans. But my memory of Ken Giles is him just bowling down Mariners hitters between 2016 and 2017. And I looked it up, and he had 16.1 career innings against the Mariners as an Astro. Guess how many Mariners he struck out in that time? In his
31.
32. Did you see the tweet?
Wow.
Or is that,
I did not
just
see the
guess?
Tweet. I was, wow. No, that was just guessing a big number.
Yep. Very, very, very good guess. Yeah. So anyway, that's Ken Giles. I'm happy to have him on board, and even happier if he's willing to like get involved in some Astros trash talking.
Oh yeah. I didn't even think about that. I feel like they've been pretty reluctant to do that, but maybe as more time passes, they'll feel more comfortable airing them out.
Well, I think if you have Middleton in there being totally willing to trash talk the Angels, which so far he has been, he has posted some spicy things to his Instagram. Absolutely 100% recommend him as a follow. Definitely had some harsh words about the Angels coaching. So, yeah, I'm excited for this AL West revenge tour out of the bullpen. I think it's going to be fun.
I agree. And just to put a bow on this, last full season that Ken Giles pitched in 2019 as the Blue Jays closer was very, very good. ERA under 2, whip exactly 1.00, 23 saves if you're into that, 83 strikeouts to 17 walks. Like, the talent is certainly there. Now it's just a question of what will Tommy John due to this guy's arm. And he's still, I mean, he's 29 right now, or maybe just turned 30. So, like, there's a lot of things to like here. And if you don't like it, I don't really know what to tell you. Like, I understand that there is a whole subset of Mariner fans that we're never going to be able to please, you know, the ones who are just upset all the time and, like, see any move as a reason to trash the organization. Like, we saw that when they literally signed Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz. People are like, oh God, here we go again. And like, that was the best move they've made probably of my entire life. So
I
relax, everyone.
For sure there's a segment of Mariners fans that won't be happy no matter what. But, and there's definitely, it's weird to see a prospect blowback where people are like, essentially like, the baby Mariners ain't played nobody, which of course they haven't. They're prospects. But would you rather have highly regarded prospects or not? I don't understand. Like, that's how you build a team that sustains winning. That's how you build a team that doesn't have to rely on just free agency signings and filling holes year after year and trades. Like, you build from within. So I don't understand the pushback against that. I do understand the frustration with them not spending money at the major league level. Again, I think it's a failure of communication, but I feel like we've all had to walk some things back because they did open the pocketbooks and acquire James Paxton.
They did.
And they beat the Mets. They beat the Mets to do it.
Go Mets, baby. Love the Mets.
Which I
thought was hilarious. Just real quick, sorry. It is, hilarious is a good word for it. It's almost like unfathomable how much the Mets have been like involved in the Mariners, like just organization over the last 2 or 3 years. Like every single thing that the Mariners do in an offseason, there's usually like a footnote about the Mets, or it's like a straight up trade with the Mets. It's so crazy to me how much like the Mets being a faraway National League team have influenced the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, it's not even, I mean, I know everyone automatically thinks of Jared Kelnick, and Mets fans are so not over that. Every single thing that's posted about him, like, God, people move on. But also, like Chris Flexen, the last team he played for was the Mets, and Mets fans are also extremely online. See, I think Mets fans are kind of annoying.
I didn't bring them up during our conversation earlier because I kind of agree. But some of them are funny. Like there's like that with every fan base, especially of like a big market team. Some of them like embrace the like our team is weird, lol, and some of them are just like yelling into the void, kind of thing.
They're definitely less overall annoying and toxic than Yankees fans, for example, who just consistently trying to trade for Marco Gonzalez. And trying to trade like trash for him.
Joe Doyle shared an email he got from us. The whole email just said Luke Voit for Marco Gonzalez. That was the whole email. As if Joe is the general manager.
Or like they're playing I don't know, fantasy baseball together or something. It was weird. We get some weird emails. That's one of the weirder ones for sure. Devoid of any context.
That's a fun little tiny micro part of baseball Twitter. Every team deciding they get Marco Gonzalez. Yes. Like, all right, I guess he's been pretty good. So now he's on the Twins. Now he's on the Cardinals. Every team thinks they have him.
Yes. If you want to just have a laugh, like just Twitter search Marco Gonzalez trade and see what fans of other teams think they can get for Marco Gonzalez or think that their team could give up for Marco Gonzalez, because it is generally just hilarious and, you know, an overall, and this, there are national baseball writers too who will insist on putting him in trade packages because they are obviously like not listening to the very many quotes that come out of the Mariners front office where they you know, talk about how Marco is the team leader and, you know, they've built an entire marketing arm around him. But anyway, yes, Mets fans are a little damaged, which I can understand, and so I extend them a fair amount of sympathy. But yeah, they were all like, Mets legend Chris Flexen. Why?
Mets legend Rafael Montero, too.
Yeah. Yes, so, I mean, really, they have all... to me, I feel like, though, that says more about the Mets and their player development or lack thereof. There are definitely teams that DePoto loves to poach from, and the Mets have been one of the biggest ones in recent years. I'm thinking Ashton Goudeau, Chasen Bradford, not all of these guys stuck with the team, obviously, but they pretty clearly identified something that they thought was missing in the Mets pitching development and have just been exploiting that for a long time. I was really hoping we might wind up with Steven Matt somehow, but alas.
Shout out to Chasen Bradford, though, while we're on the subject. One of the few active Mariners to ever acknowledge the Lookout Landing podcast. Do you remember that?
Nope.
We were doing an off-season preview, and we had done it like by position group. Remember, so we did like the hitters, and then we did the pitchers, and then we did the relievers. And on the reliever one, the like, I think it was the sub headline on the post was like, a lot of these guys are just happy to be here or something. I said something.
Oh yes,
like,
I remember that.
Something flippantly about like, oh, we're just happy to be here, because it was like a no-name bullpen. And then Chasen Bradford found it and responded to us. He's like, I'm great at just being happy to be here, yeah. Which was like, I couldn't tell if he was joking or mad at us.
Me neither.
But it was very funny.
Yeah, he's pretty online. He's a free agent right now, and he's been actively looking for a job. So I hope somebody will give him a shot. He's a TJ guy too, I think. But, he was pretty decent for us on and off.
Absolutely.
Somebody should give him some kind of a job. But yeah, yes. so many Mets that have made their way through this organization, specifically pitcher Mets, but yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, all right, let's talk about James Paxton,
yes.
The signing that seems
I
to have united.
I could not think of a segue, sorry.
Yeah, the kind of the opposite of the Giles thing. This one seems to have united Mariners Twitter. The only thing I could think of that would be more popular is getting Taiwan Walker back, which could probably still happen. Who knows?
No,
I don't know if they're just waiting.
Because Taiwan Walker signed with the...
Oh, no.
Oh, did you miss this?
I missed this. Tell me live on air. Another live
no way.
Reaction.
No,
yeah, I missed it.
No way. I didn't dream this, did I?
I don't know. What team is he on? Tell me right now.
Wait. I have to double check. I guess he's still a free agent. I thought he had a deal.
Oh, it's our friends. No way.
Yes.
Are you fucking kidding
no.
me? It's the New York Mets, everyone.
It's the Mets, baby.
It doesn't look like it's official, but
no.
1 hour ago, CBS Sports said rumors Mets have interest in Taiwan Walker.
Yeah, I think that all broke. I think it was maybe my birthday and I was only paying slight attention, but yeah. Yes, yeah.
He is their main target, which means he will be a Mariner. All right, this is great.
I just want to see Taiwan and Paxton reunited because they are really good buddies. Have you ever seen that gif I made of Paxton was pitching great and Ty was so excited for him and he came over to him in the dugout and like hugged him really hard from behind and Paxton just stands there like stiff as a board, like visually uncomfortable. And Taiwan will not, like, he keeps bouncing off of him like a little brother. Like, he will not leave him alone. Pax is trying to have a conversation with the pitching coach at the time, which I think was Mel Stottlemyre. And eventually they have to, like, shoo Ty away like a little puppy or something. It's so cute.
I do remember that.
I will send it to you.
Yeah.
So
I don't think I've ever seen a more stoic, like, on-field demeanor as James Paxton.
No,
a lot of it looks like sadness, but I think that's just his face, you know?
Which is
so
funny.
It is very funny to see that dynamic.
Yes, like that give and take between Pax being just, like, absolutely straight-faced all the time, deadpan, and Taiwan, like, so effervescent and bubbly. And they're good friends. They're, like, friends in real life, too. They hang out. They get together whenever they're in the same city, go out to dinner, stuff like that, so...
Yeah, and shout out Mel Stottlemyre. I hope you're pulling fish out of a river somewhere.
Believe,
that seems to be all
yeah,
he does.
Yeah, I believe that is what he's doing. You know, it's that sweet retired life.
To each their own, baby. But James Paxton being back is, I think, a great baseball move. And, like, strategically for the Mariners, like, PR spin,
absolutely.
A great way to, like, end the offseason, you know, because they knew people were very upset.
Yeah.
They knew they needed to, like, conjure up some goodwill, especially to end the offseason. Like, I don't think they're going to do anything big anymore. I mean, spring training is literally starting, like, as we speak. There might be, like, another non-roster invite or something. But to end it with Paxton as, like, a reunion on a one-year, like, P peanuts deal. I mean, it's like, what was it, $10 million? Like, totally reasonable for James Paxton, enough to outbid the Mets also.
Yes, which, let's not forget about that. It's like 8.5, and then there are there are escalators that are it was so funny to see this tweeted out by like Heyman and Rosenthal and Pisan and all them, that they were makeable goals or reachable goals. And I was like, well, I hope they're reachable goals. Why would you put insurmountable goals into a player's contract? Like,
we'll give you $20 million if you strike out 300 hitters.
If you strike out Mike Trout 10 times, you get $100 million. Oh, like, what?
That could work. He owns Mike Trout. That's another thing I love about James Paxton.
I was at that game. I was at that game with staff writer Tim, actually. That was the first time I'd ever really hung out with Tim. And it was, we watched it from a sunny spot in like the 300 level, and it was just absolutely delightful. So what a day. What a day that was.
I think it was Trout. This is a long time ago. Absolutely do not fact check me. I believe Trout had some quote about how, like, facing James Paxton, the ball looks like it's coming off a mountain. Some Angels hitter used that term mountain to describe, like, his arm angle, which I think is lovely and accurate. Like, I could not imagine facing James Paxton, especially if you've never seen him before. I think that quote was from, like, 2014, 15, where he was still kind of a mystery. And then you just see this, like, giant Canadian guy throwing way over the top. Like, I love it. I could not be more excited about this move, to be quite honest. I think it's like, pretty much a lose-lose. I mean, sorry, a no-lose situation. Yeah. A win-win.
Win-win, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Brain does not work. Because, there's, like, James Paxton, if he pitches well enough, you would think either some team will sign him to a big deal, which, like, you know, I'm very pro player. Get your money, James. Or the Mariners will just be that team. Be like, hey, stick around. Like, now you get to be here when we're actually going for the playoffs. So, like, if he is bad, obviously that's, like, a bummer. But at least we get the Maple Grove, hopefully with fans. Who knows what will happen there. But we get to see James Paxton pitch in Seattle again, where he seems to genuinely love it. I know you're a big Katie Joe head. We'll get her back in our lives, back in the Northwest. Although she's been here the whole time, question mark. What's the deal there? You are the expert on Katie Joe.
She has like a salon or a spot at a salon in Bellevue. And I know that they do have a house here that I guess they never gave up when they, I don't think that they settled in New York. I think that was like apartment living. So I think the plan was always to, it's sort of similar to like Justin Britt has like a condo here still. I think if you've been in Seattle for a certain amount of time and hey, you have the money for real estate, you snatch that up and you don't let it go. I mean, I didn't make all that much of it. I just figured that she was doing like her professional thing, and I didn't realize that there was any kind of connection between that and him maybe coming back, but I'm sure that probably factored into it as well. You know, you have a life and you work here, and you know, your family's on this side. I also just think, like, for him getting out of New York and getting out of that media spotlight, like, he is not Mr. Media Spotlight. And
No.
He's like the opposite of that. And he is an intense and a fiery and a competitive guy. But like, I just think that I couldn't think of much worse of a matchup for him than him. Because when it's going good, it was so, so good. And obviously the highlight of Paxton's tenure as a Yankee was in 2019, the playoffs. I think it was game 5. He just had an absolutely dominant performance. I was so proud of him. It hurt my heart a little, but also I was very proud of him. And he was fired up, and the crowd loved him. And a lot of the nice Yankee fans, like when he, you know, posted about how he was leaving and thank you, New York, and all that, because he's a classy guy, that James.
Yeah, sure is.
They responded very nicely, and all of them brought up that moment. So that was really cool to see. But, you know, when it's going bad, it's just bad. You're on the back of the New York Post with one of those god-awful pun headlines. And it's just that hurt my heart worse to see. So I'm glad he's going to be coming back to some place where the media landscape is a little bit friendlier. And, you know, if he rebuilds his value and is able to secure a big contract. I don't think the Mariners will be that team to give it to him just because of the pitching that they have coming up. I kind of wish they would, because you can never have too much pitching. And if you have a James Paxton, like, why don't you just... But, you know, if he commands, like, a huge contract, I don't think there's a... I don't think that a reunion is super likely. I am very curious about how he will be, because obviously he's just had injury. I don't think it's unfair to call him an injury-prone pitcher. He's struggled with them. So I'm curious, after the long layoff and the... What was his deal?
He had so many deals.
No, but I mean,
a couple of them.
Was it a back? I can't remember now. I should have looked this up.
That
earlier.
Seems right. Didn't he have like a neck thing too? He had, there was a shoulder. There was the time he got hit by the ball on his forearm. I can't remember all of them either. I'm just kind of stream of consciousness listing them off. I don't know though, like what the like structural ones are though, because those are obviously the scarier ones. I think that might have been a shoulder, where he had something going on, like actually with a joint or a ligament or whatever.
It was back. It was, yeah. So back stuff worries me. The most recent one was a back injury, and he was out 3 to 4 months with surgery in 2020.
Okay.
So
thank you for confirming.
Yeah, that was the thing that knocked him down most recently. I don't like back injuries. They are notoriously difficult to heal from, and a lot of times they're kind of never right. You just have to pitch through a certain amount of pain. So that I don't like. And I have some questions about how effective he's going to be. Are they going to tweak his mechanics any? Like, what is going to... What that's going to... I think that despite his previous performance and despite everything we know about James Paxton, you know, the big fastball, the hammer curve, love the curve, I feel like he's a big question mark.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, we, at this point, I think Mariner fans are intimately familiar with James Paxton and, like, the things he can do well, the things he struggles with, which really is mostly injuries. And then I guess walks, if you want to talk, like, baseball stuff. I'm looking at his BREF page right now. I forgot that in 2017, he led the league in wild pitches with 15 of those bad boys,
yeah.
Which is pretty funny. And then also in that playoff game you were talking about with the Yankees, he went 8 1/3 innings, 12 strikeouts, but guess what? Did have 6 walks, which is crazy. That's a lot of walks. So, like, you know, he has his shortcomings, like you
yeah.
said, but it's hard for me to, like, look at this deal in any other way than, like, fuck yeah. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Like, it's crazy to me that there's another differing opinion out there.
Oh, I'm looking at the back injury, and it was a paradiscal cyst. So cyst makes me less... It's a rare type of cyst. Of course, James Paxton would get a rare type of cyst. But that kind of makes me feel a little less. If it was something that could be excised easily and just is gone now, then maybe that prognosis is a little more rosy than, like, you know, the really scary kind of back stuff where it is, like, more structural or something that accrues over time. Or the extremely dreaded... thing that Chris Archer had that I cannot think of right now.
Thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yes.
It sounds
you.
So bad.
It is.
Thoracic.
I did some reading about it when I wrote up Chris Archer as a potential off-season target, and I would have really liked to have Chris Archer. But it is, I mean, it's a scare. That's a really scary injury. And that comes a lot of times from issues in the spine. So it's an accrual injury that is a repetitive use injury. And this thing that Paxton had didn't sound like that. So, I mean, there's, you know, I would give it honestly a 50-50 shot. Like, I have no feeling about it one way or the other. Apparently he was super impressive at his workout when he threw for people. So much so that the Mariners worried they weren't going to get him. But is he going to be able to maintain that over the demands of a season, especially after not pitching for so long? I think he's going to be really well served by the 6-man rotation. So we'll see.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm now just laughing at, like, the image of, like, a Mariner scout at that session and a Mets scout, and them seeing completely different things. Like, the Mariners were clearly like, oh, God, like, they're going to – every team is going to throw money at him. And the Mets are like, nope, we will not go higher than $7 million or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was I thought, kind of chump change. I still don't think eight is all that much, but maybe that was higher than other teams were willing to go. My guess is probably not, and I think there was a certain degree of security in coming back to a place that he knows well, a team he knows, and, you know, I mean, you can say whatever you will about the Maple Grove, but if I had a personal fan base set up for me that was supporting me and cheering for me no matter what, after I'd been in the worst media landscape in the country for the past 2 years and suffered through injuries and... Yeah, I would be. I can't imagine that that didn't play a role in him. And he even, like, especially shouted out the Maple Grove in his tweet announcing he was coming back to Seattle. So,
yeah. And by the way, I will say whatever I want about the Maple Grove. They're delightful. I love the Maple Grove.
Yeah, no, actually, the only thing to say about the Maple Grove is that it is fantastic. It is organic. It is... completely homegrown. It's a marketer's dream. And it is absolutely like, cheer for the team you want to cheer for, however you want to cheer for them. That is quite literally what fandom is. There is no conversation to be had about needing to earn it or like, this is not deserved or anything. That's garbage. That is garbage, clickbait, talk radio, hot got garbage, and should be tossed in the garbage. Did I say garbage enough? Garbage.
You did. You did. You did say garbage a lot. Good. If you'd like to learn more about the Maple Grove, check out a past episode of the Lookout Landing podcast in which I spoke to Hillary Kirby, one of the co-founders of the Maple Grove, about how it all came together. How about that? I'll tell you that for free right now. And boom. One more thing about James Paxton. Mike Trout is 5-for-28 with 11 strikeouts. No home runs, not a single RBI to be fair.
Oh, we love it. We love to see it.
We do. Okay, let's go to our listener questions to end this. We talked a lot about Paxton and Giles. That was kind of the news peg for this episode, and some fans came with some creative questions. I like this one from our guy Brian at A Player to Be Named Later. The M's are now as lefty heavy as you can get in a starting rotation. Is that a concern, or are their profiles so different that it doesn't matter? That's a good question. I think that's definitely something that the Mariners themselves will be asked about. I'm going to be intrigued to see if that comes up at spring training, if Jerry DePoto has commented on that, or maybe he already has. I don't know. But I don't feel like that can be a concern. It's definitely like weird. It's unusual. But I don't think that that's like a design flaw, you know what I mean? I think that just sort of happened, and the Mariners clearly are okay with it. I don't think you can, like, spin it in a way where it's like, oh, my God, like, this team is coming to town for three games against the Mariners, and they have a great lineup against lefties. Like, maybe, but I don't think that, like Brian mentioned in his question, I think that the arms are so different. Like, facing Marco and then Paxton and then Kikuchi, like, that's three completely different pitchers.
And
so
Sheffield.
I think we should be fine.
I mean, those are four different, completely different pitchers, I would say. Like, Sheffield's going to attack you with his slider. Kikuchi, I don't even think we know what Kikuchi is going to come out being yet completely.
I don't think he knows, and that's also part of the problem.
Concerning. I mean, this is a... For more on this, go read Kikuchi's 40 and 40, but... It's a make or break year for him, at least as far as his contract is considered. And we did see some improvement last year, so I'm really hoping to continue to see that build. But yes, Sheffield is very different from a command control lefty, which is Marco Gonzalez, is different from a power lefty, which is James Paxton. These are all different height guys as well. We know Sheffield is a short king. Paxton is our big maple. So it's coming at you from... Paxton has that high overhand slot. Sheffield is a little lower. Kikuchi almost has like a three-quarter slot, I think. I'd have to go look at that. But anyway, lots of different sizes of people, lots of different arm slots coming at you, and lots of different stuff. So I think it's mixed up enough that the righty-lefty thing isn't going to matter so much.
Yeah, and your boy Nick Margovan.
Nick Margavichus. I just needed...
Mr. Magorium's look, Wonder Emporium.
I just needed to go to the word gym and lift that particular name a couple of times. I've got it now. Best shape of my speaking life, Nick Margavichus.
Incredible. Great job. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We have a question from Brady Tyler Harris about Taiwan, the chances of snagging him. As we mentioned up top, the Mets are interested. So, like, I don't know what that means. The Mets have been interested in every single eligible free agent this offseason.
Yes.
The Mets have been interested in or just straight up signed him. There was some tweet about, like, I think it's like double digit people the Mets have signed this offseason. It blew my mind to see it all laid out in one tweet like that. Mm-hmm. But then he says potential to trade either him or Paxton at deadline, which I had not thought about. If the Mariners are out of it and Paxton had been pitching well, I guess you could trade him, like literally do exactly what they did with Taiwan last year and just see what you can get. It's always better to get a player back than let him just walk.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
For sure.
So, I mean, I guess that is, to answer Brady's question, like, yes, that is a possibility. And honestly, the Mariners would be stupid not to pursue that if they were, like, super far out of the race, which I think most of us probably think they will be. If not super far out, like, unrealistic path.
Yeah, that is certainly how they are projected to. That is certainly what all the projections say, is that the Mariners will be super far out of it. I don't think they're going to be super. I have talked myself into, this is always what happens. I always talk myself into thinking the team is going to be better than it actually is. But this year, with the Paxton signing, I really have started to feel like some kernels of hope blossom. But that being said, Paxton is a good trade chip and can bring back something, I mean, they're going to listen on everyone, obviously. They always do. But if he can really bring back a prospect to kind of bolster that next wave, because we're going to see some graduations from, you know, Logan Gilbert's going to graduate. Evan White already has. Kyle Lewis already has. Jared Kelnick's going to graduate. You know, if we could have somebody who slots into that next wave so that we get some guys coming up in the second half of 2022-23, like, I could definitely see them pulling the trigger on that.
Yeah, you know what? It's so obvious now. I can see the headline. July 31st, 2021, James Paxton traded to the New York Mets.
The Mets. I thought you were going to say the Yankees.
No. I think the Mets, you know, they didn't want to pay for him, but they will gladly give up a prospect or three, as we have seen before.
We'll see. I mean, that I don't know what's going to happen in that National League East. That one's inscrutable to me. But other than the Braves,
that's always the circus division of Major League
it's
Baseball.
It's gonna be
just at any given point.
I mean,
there's so much weirdness.
Yeah, like what are the Marlins doing? Like the Marlins were sort of in it last year. I mean, that's the division I think I have the toughest time predicting for sure.
Yeah, the Marlins technically won a playoff series last year. It was one of the little short three gamers, but like they won.
Yeah. Can't take that away from them. And they've got some interesting prospects coming up. So, I don't know. Some intrigue in that NL East. I thought you were going to say the Yankees, though, which would be hilarious. But also be very
mean. That would also be very fun.
That would be very mean to James Paxton, I think. I don't know. Maybe he wants to go back. Maybe he would want to go back and, you know, set that right. And I would be forced to.
I doubt it. Yeah, I really don't think he wants any part of the Yankees
again. Maybe he doesn't. That's fair. I saw some tape.
To shave his beard off.
I don't want to say to put a bow on this because it's not really putting a bow on this, but I did see some takes that were the Mariners fleeced the Yankees in the James Paxton trade, pointing out that we essentially got Justice Sheffield for free. Now, well, no, that's not exactly how that works. Could you say the Mariners won the trade? Yes, I think. I mean, you still don't know exactly what Sheffield is going to be. I think probably he's going to be a pretty steady back of the rotation arm. Now that he's really like settled into who he is, I really like the trajectory that he's on. And then obviously you also got Tom Thompson Williams and Eric Swanson out of that deal, which neither of which are super impressive so far, but you could even just look at the Sheffield Paxton thing and call it a win for the Mariners. But I mean, Paxton had that, Paxton did what he was supposed to do over there, kind of. I mean, he had that game five performance, and we haven't totally seen justice yet, but I would not call it a fleecing. I would say that the Mariners are on their way to potentially probably winning that trade.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's end. We have two questions that aren't about Paxton or Giles, which we can address because we are very nuanced and varied and contain multitudes and all that. This one from Goodwill Stunting, incredible.
Nice.
At Evan James Audio. Rank the defense. We got a defense question of Lewis, Kelnick, Julio, and Trammell, and who eventually winds up where. Evan says they all kind of strike me as right fielders. This is an interesting question because I don't know a lot about prospect defense. The only one we've seen at the major league level, obviously, is Lewis, who played a pretty solid center field last year. But correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, Kalanick does project as a center fielder, right? He fancies himself as a Jim Edmonds, Steve Finley type.
Yes, absolutely. Kelnick thinks he is a center fielder, and that is probably the best fit for him. He's fast. I mean, he's rangy. He's not super tall, so you're not going to get those awesome like catches at the wall that Kalou has. So I think you keep running Kalou out in center. I don't think Kyle Lewis is a right fielder. I mean, he looked to me really good out there. So,
yeah, I agree. And Julio, I think, is the more natural fit for right
field.
Julio
is definitely a right fielder.
So massive, and he has the arm to make that throw to third.
He's got a great arm. So Julio is definitely a right fielder. Kelnick, I would say, is maybe a center fielder sub, but I kind of think of him in left field just because Julio will be right field. But you can move Kelnick all over, honestly, and Kelnick will play a decent center field. The recent scouting take on him is that he's gotten too big and too muscly and cannot...
Which, hold on, time out. We have seen that from his videos. All of the videos are just him working out maniacally.
He is big and muscly, and he is a maxed out frame, but he is still fast. Like, he's still fast, and he's smart, and he's adaptable. Like, I definitely think the defensive side of his game is the one where he has the most steps forward he can take. But that's only because his offensive ceiling is so high, only because he's so good at the plate. Like, that's the only thing. It's kind of like saying, like, the weakness of Mike Trout is his defense, right? Like, you're picking some nits on that point. The scout buzz, and I don't know where this came from, but I was reading this in the top 100 prospects article on Fangraphs, is Kelnick has maxed out his size and projects as possibly a first base DH type. And I want to be in the room where somebody, where whatever scouts think that, have to say that to Jared Kelnick's face. Like, I want them to look him in the face and say, we see you as a first base DH. And then I want to see what remains of that scout's face. No, I'm what a way to motivate him to go out and get even better at his craft in defensively. Then that is absolutely, thank you to these anonymous scouts for providing Jared Kelnick with something he will put up on his locker and stare at every day and absolutely use to drive his game forward. So, long-winded answer, but yeah. I think Kyle Lewis stays out there until he tells you he can't stay out there anymore. Kelnick subs in slash can take over those duties if, you know, I mean, I don't see Kyle Lewis losing a ton of foot speed over the next couple of years. He's kind of is what he is right now. He's not getting any bigger or stronger. He's physically maxed out. So what he does in the field is what he is. Julio and Wright, and was there somebody else we had to slot in there?
Well, Trammell was the other
Trammell,
person.
Yeah, so Trammell
slots in as a DH, maybe.
Trammell is just hard for me because I haven't seen him play much. So I mean, he's athletic, he's speedy, he's fine defensively. I've never seen anything that contradicts that and is probably above average, but I honestly, Tramiel is hard for me to evaluate just because I have not personally seen him play. I'm only relying on what other people say, and that is not, I don't like to give opinions that are only based on what other people say. So,
yeah, good call. Good question, too. Thank you. Good Will Stunting. All right, let's end with this one, another one that's very tailored to us. This is from Max at MXWL18. What quad A type player do you see yourself getting overly invested in this season? And then Max says, personally, I am all in on the Ham Swaggerty.
Ham Swaggerty! Oh!
Just a tweet after Kate's heart, really.
It really is. I love him. That would probably be my pick. I guess we can't pick Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore is not a quad A type anymore.
Dylan Moore is not a quad A. Yeah, exactly. He's here. Yeah, he's here and he's perfect.
He is perfect. He absolutely would have been my pick for that last year, though, which is just funny. Like, you know, it's funny how a player can blossom. And I'm most thankful to Dylan Moore for easing the sting of Chris Taylor. At me for a long time. So thank you, Dylan Moore, for just being fantastic in every way.
You know who I like for this?
Yes.
I'm gonna throw out, sorry if this offends, if he's not maybe a quad A player in everyone's eye, I'm gonna say Luis Torrens. I really like him.
Oh.
I just like watching him play. I think he's got an interesting profile. I don't think he's the catcher of the future, obviously. I think that's what everyone knows Cal Raleigh is. I don't think he's gonna be good enough to supplant Tom Murphy unless Murphy just completely forgot how to hit during his rehab. But I like Luis Torrens. I have no reason not to like him. And I think, I don't know, when I watch him hit, this is like total old school scout, he looks hitterish. You know what I mean? Like every time he's up there, I'm like, yeah, this guy, he's got a great setup. He looks calm at the plate. He knows what he's doing. I didn't see him ever like look foolish at the plate last year. So he's my guy. I mean, I know he's like literally a backup catcher who might not even make the big league roster right out of camp.
Oh, I think
he's
think
my guy.
Will.
I think
it's pretty clearly going to be Murphy Torrens. The question is, how much of a timeshare is it between the two of them?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I was trying to think of, like, who's the other catcher, and then I realized I was thinking of Austin Nola, who was traded for Torrens.
R.I.P. Austin Nola. We loved him.
We did. Still cannot believe how much we got for him.
Another quad A guy. I mean, Austin Nola is, like, you know, popping up in fantasy draft chats for, like, a solid catcher option. Like, again, talk about just taking a quad A guy and getting a ton out of it. I mean, I love those kinds of stories. I will always root for Austin Nola. I think Torrens.
From an intrigue standpoint, I'm excited to see the Torrens, France, Taylor Trammell trio as like, what did they learn in the Padres system? You know, like what was their development like? How does it look when they get here? Yeah. Like, what can they add to it? All that stuff.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Torrens, I think, especially is interesting because he posted some crazy loud exit velocities. He just absolutely hit the ball hard and had some really, really good hits, too. So, and he's still young. He's like the same age as Cal Raleigh. So that part is intriguing as well. I think Torrens is... You could maybe consider him quad A right now, kind of. I wouldn't put him in the same class as like a Ham Swaggerty, but maybe he's like, yeah, I wouldn't put him in that same class, but I think he's.
It does seem
he's
like we have
fringy.
Less. We have less quad A players than in the past. You know, like that's a good sign. I'm trying to think. Like Tim Lopes is gone, right? Is he on another team,
yes,
or is he still a free agent?
Yeah, he went to the Reds? Somewhere in
Let's
the middle
out.
Of the country.
Tim Lopes is on, wait for it,
the
Milwaukee
Brewers.
Yeah,
somewhere in the middle of the country, like I said. Yeah, the Brewers love ex-Mariners, man. They've got Gamel, Narvaez. No, wait, we got Narvaez from them. Right? Or no, we sent,
wrong.
Yep.
No, we got him from the White
That's
Sox.
Right.
Yeah, he's on the Brewers
Speaking
now.
Speaking of teams that they love to poach from, love some former White Sox products as well. Okay, quad A guy, a true quad A guy. I think you're right, though. Like, we don't have as many fringy guys. I will say, just personally, and people do not like him because he's taking up Jared Kelnick's spot, but I love Jose Marmolejos. I love him as a person. He showed up for his baseball bash, fan fest, whatever, virtual thing, in full uniform, and he was the only one who did. And, you know,
kitted up head to toe in Mariners.
Yeah, had the jersey, had the hat, and you know, he really appreciates being here, and I love him for that. I don't know if I would pick him as like a breakout player, but I love him as a person. I think it's probably mean to call Ty France a quad A player, but that is what he was, literally, with the Padres. Like, more because he was blocked, but he was that guy who was just absolutely destroying AAA, like, just destroying the formerly known as the Pacific Coast League, RIP. So, yeah, it was... I don't think he counts either. I think I have to go to pitchers to do this. And... maybe I'll go with Matt McGill, who had TJ and is apparently like kind of, he's helping Andrés Muñoz through his TJ recovery, which I think is very sweet. McGill, when he was healthy, showed some good stuff, and I don't know if he's like a closer, which he was pushed into that role just because the Mariners were so, so bad. The bullpen was so bad in 2019. But so I don't think he's a closer, but I do think he's like a good solid bullpen depth piece. And you know, when you're talking quad A, I think that's about as exciting as it is, as it's gonna get. But if you're looking for like who is the player who's gonna be the next Dylan Moore, Austin Nola, I like Sam Haggerty as a pick.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I haven't spent a lot of mental power thinking about Sam Haggerty, but seems like a cool guy. Sam Haggerty, if you're listening, come on the Lookout Landing podcast.
That's what the off season is for. It's so we do not have to think about these things. But you know, we back, baby.
We back. Yeah, today actually, the 17th is the day that pitchers and catchers reported. So we are ushering in this new season with content for all to hear, and we love you for listening for it, everyone. Thank you so much. I like, it's weird to me that this happened so quickly. I know that like everything that people say about the pandemic is framed in like, what is time doesn't exist. Like, it's become very stale, but like I was truly blindsided by how quickly baseball got here again.
I feel like I was a little ahead of you guys because I have to do the schedule and think about the 40 and 40s and think about like the AL West threat assessment and like planning all that stuff out. So I feel like I was kind of jumping up and down on January 2nd or whatever, being like, guys, baseball's coming. And no one was listening to me. But now it does feel like every day we get closer to the season, more momentum gathers and people are talking about baseball, and football ended, and that is always, I think, the biggest thing to like really kick the baseball season anticipation into overdrive is getting yeah. rid of football and not having to look at Tom Brady's face for like another 5 months, which is my, other than the baseball, my other favorite thing about this time of year.
I think the problem for me too, and this has been even before the pandemic, just because how baseball is acting, like the off season being so slow and like players not being signed when spring training start, that doesn't help me to like make it feel like baseball season. You know, like whatever that off season was when spring training started and Machado and Harper were still unsigned, I was like, this is weird. And now that's just continued, and it doesn't make things feel as special when it's like, oh, you know, this is. It makes the offseason feel incomplete, I guess, when good players are still unsigned. So sign good players, GMs, if you're listening.
I absolutely agree. It's like, it feels like you can't do your fantasy baseball drafts, or you can't like really start. I know it drives projection makers wild because they all want to get their projections out the door, especially the ones that do like really heavy duty math. Like, Pecota.
Even just like scribbling down like lineups, like when I'm like, oh, who's on the, you know, right. who's on the Brewers now? And I like try to write it down, and then like 2 days later they sign three other guys. That's very
annoying. Right. So you don't want to like commit anything to stone, but it would be so much more helpful if everybody just, you know, just sign the good players, pay the money instead of waiting around and playing like a, you know, that trivia murder party game on Jackbox where you have to like take the money, but if you take too much money, you die. But if you take too little money, you die. So you have to take like just the right amount of money. Feels like everybody, all MLB GMs are playing trivia murder party.
That's a much more professional thing than what I was really gonna say. So yeah, we're going with Kate's
description. Oh, I thought mine was pretty niche. Like let's go ahead.
It was niche. Mine was a little more vulgar.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. We're at the end of the podcast. Oh, no God. One's listening.
Okay. I have to pull it up. Okay, hold on. It's referencing a legendary tweet from the since deceased Tom Bro dude. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
I am not.
He was a legend. Tom Bro dude, describing the Major League Baseball offseason, said, "Some dude has been retweeting me for months but won't follow me."
Matthew, that's too vulgar.
Fair enough. Well, I'm going to get out of here before I get myself into any more trouble. Thank you for listening.
FCC, subscribe. Don't find us.
No, FCC, please look the other way on this one.
Be cool. That's what federal agencies do, right? They just generally are cool.
Hey, if I've learned anything from the past year, it's that the federal government does a great job. So anyway, stay safe out there, everyone. I'm glad we all made it through the mini snowpocalypse that ravaged the Northwest. Mm. If you're outside the Northwest, I know things are still quite chilly and actually very dire, so stay strong out there, and if it makes you feel any better, if you're one of these people, college baseball starts this week. By the time this is out, I think we'll have real D1 college baseball, which is always fun. To me, that's when, like, things start to take shape. Like, baseball in February is always weird, but at least that's, like, the soft launch for the rest absolutely. Of the baseball world.
Yeah, I care about college baseball so fervently in February, and then just in decreasing amounts for the rest of the season, but...
The entire country is really depending on these like warm weather college baseball teams to like play absolutely. Games for us right now. Yes. We need this. UCLA, if you're listening, yes. Please play your baseball games.
Yeah, Georgia, stand up.
Yeah. All right, y'all. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for the questions to everyone who asked. And yeah, have a good one. I'm going to end everyone with like a goodbye, like a cordial goodbye. Hope you have a wonderful day.
We're going to hope this email finds you well. We're going to hope that this email finds you well then. Okay. All right.
Hey, listen, everyone.
You're the director of podcasts, so.
Listen, everyone. If you made it this far, I just want to say warm regards to you and yours.
Why did you start talking like a Borscht Belt comedian?
If you made it this far. Idea? Hey, I'm sending emails.
Wait, now we're Italian. What is happening?
I do struggle with that. Every impression of a white guy becomes Italian. Which is great, because as we know, you cannot be racist to Italians. It's not possible.
Do not cut any of this.
I won't. Okay. Bye.
They say we ain't acting right. Always try to turn our fucking color into black and white, but they'll never change them, never understand them. Radical's my anthem, turn my fucking amps up. So instead of critiquing a bitch and being mad as fuck, just admit not only are we talented, we're rad as fuck.